Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
I'm HRN Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat in 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup. This week, we're focusing on water. You'll hear some disturbing news from an NYC investigative reporter.
Here lies the problem, how much we don't know about water tanks.
Katie Kiefer reports on water woes in the heartland.
Their water is heavily polluted with nitrates, which are coming from agricultural chemical applications on fields and running off into their water table.
And we'll check in with Dave Arnold, who's about to open a new bar that will serve some pretty fancy H2O.
It is hardcore.
So pour up a tall glass of ice water and be refreshed by this week's episode of Meat in 3, available on heritageradionetwork.org, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas! It's Christmas in summer. I feel like Crazy Eddie.
It's always Christmas here. Always Christmas.
All right, Arts and Seizures back! Mike Edison here with everybody's favorite pizza, Pizza Rumba.
It's good to be
back. Today, Pete, a very, very special...
Who
special
is it?
Guest. Well, who Julia Crowe, who is not only a distinguished author, but she's also the first classical musician that
classically
we've ever
trained.
Had. I've been trying so hard.
I don't recognize her from the conservatory.
To get someone here who is not a rock bum like we are to get on the show, and it's taken me 242 episodes to get someone on here who didn't crawl out of the garage, who's not somehow aligned, you know, with the swamp from which we emerged. Let's hear it for Julia Crowe, her new book, her almost new book.
I think the audience is gonna. You know what? I was gonna say this. Today's live audience. To me, seemed at the very verge of violence.
And well, that's because they heard classical, and these rock nerds that listen to our show just reject this sort of thing. Julia's almost new book is called My First Guitar.
What's it about?
Well, it's tales of true love and lost chords. It is absolutely... let the thing speak for itself.
Ipso facto,
as they say. But Tales of My First Guitar, featuring Jimmy Page, you've heard of him. Les Paul, Joe Satriani, Melissa Etheridge, these are just the names on the cover. Pat Metheny, Scotty Moore, my very favorite, because I think every great guitar solo ever recorded done by Scotty Moore first.
Is Al DiMeola in there?
No.
Good.
Yeah, seriously. Nor is Eric Clapton.
Okay, good too.
Yeah. By the way, see if you can find that Eric Clapton racist rant, Matt, while we're talking, just so we can embarrass him further, because apparently his publicist won't let you through the gate, right, Julie? You've conducted interviews with some of the very best guitar players in the world. They're all wonderful. It's a lovely story, my first guitar. Who wouldn't want to tell it?
Yeah.
Except Eric Clapton.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see. Well,
you ever see he has a compound in Antigua, in the island. I saw it from like a mountaintop. You could look down, and it's like up the Bond villain's lair. It's on it's on this promontory sticking out into the ocean. It's probably like filled with sharks or something with a huge wall. And it's like a Bond villain.
Well, you should go there and do the interview there.
Yeah,
but tell us about your book, which I've really, really been enjoying because my first guitar is it's a universal story.
Yeah, it is. You know, it was crazy. I went down to Baltimore for a guitar festival where I did a great number of the interviews, actually, because everybody was converged who played different things. Like John Hammond was there, Andy Summers was there. But I didn't know anybody, and I wasn't, at the time, a music journalist. And I mean, I kind of knew. I did one piece for Classical Guitar Magazine in the UK, so my column started there, which was sort of the Yankee Doodle Foxtrot right before the obituaries.
You got that, Ms. Rumba? A classical music story for a UK magazine. This is class, okay? We're adding some class and distinction to the show. I'm trying to Eliza Doolittle you up a little bit, okay?
Which the column was...
I better have more tequila. Yeah, you too, actually. Yeah,
but the funny thing is...
Quick one.
I can't. I'll be on the floor. Seriously.
One shot of that stuff, you're on the floor. Two, you're under the table. Three, you're under the host. What's the Dorothy Parker line?
So, that's a funny thing. When I would go to these festivals, people would expect somebody who was British, and then they would say to me, "You have the most amazing American accent." For a lady from London, which I'm not. But I went to a festival in the UK also, I guess I'm jumping ahead of things. But yeah, no, I didn't know anybody when I went to interview with this book, and I stood in line at the cafeteria behind Andy Summers, and I saw what he was putting on his plate. But how do I break the ice, right? I looked at what he had on his plate, and I was like, you're on the blood type diet. And he's like, no, I'm not. He was very offended. And I was like, oh, neg? And he's like, yeah, I'm oh, neg, but I'm not on any diet. So that's how we met. So
he seems like a lovely chap. I'm offended by his bass player, his former bass player, singer, though.
I'm not revealing anymore. We toured with them
You toured with the police?
Of course, several times.
Of course. You did.
Our nickname for Andy was Granny. That and a few other things ensured that we never toured with them again. But
were you guys label mates? Were they IRS?
Yeah, yes, we were. And we shared booking agents and almost managers.
And then what happened to them? How'd their career go?
I don't know. I know what happened to them.
Well, I've really been enjoying the book, and I like, Jimmy Page, who was sort of... the holy grail of this whole thing, but it turned out to be a lovely fellow and very accommodating after
Yeah, he was. I mean, everybody terrified me. Oh, he's going to be like this. He's going to be like that. And I just tried to turn it all off and go, and it was intrigue anyway.
What was going his to first see him. Guitar?
It was a mysterious thing that he found in a closet that appeared and then disappeared just...
This has to do with Aleister Crowley.
He moved in a house and someone left it behind.
Yeah, it wasn't that.
And then it sprouted wings and flew around the neighborhood. My first guitar, you neglected to interview me, Julia, for this book.
What was your first guitar, Mike?
Well, it's a 1959 Down Electro. It was not bought in 1959. It was bought in 1982 or 3. I started playing the drums and didn't get to the guitar until I... got to college. No one wanted these things at the time. Yeah. It's a beautiful copper 59 U2 with the concentric knobs. It was $130 at We Buy Guitars, which is one of the great places on 48th Street, which is now like a fucking ghost town up there. It's sad.
It is, yeah.
And I still have it, of course, and it twangs more than my Telecasters. Now I own like 35 guitars.
You're kidding me.
And Pete, how many guitars should a man have?
I don't know. How many guitars should a man
have? Never, never going to have enough.
Yeah, man, it's like shoes, right?
Too much is wonderful.
Yeah. That's great.
And you, Julie, what's your first guitar?
That's crazy. Well, I grew up in a rooming house in Chicago, so my grandmother had a really tough reputation about who she would rent to. And word must have gotten out because she interviewed one guy who came in and... The whole thing, just to back up, my grandmother wanted to play music, but I don't think she ever did. But the emblem of this was a Baby Grand Player piano that was in the living room. And if she liked somebody she was interviewing for a room, she would pop in a roll, and you knew that they were going to get the room. But I kind of had my own criteria. I'd crawl under the piano and push the key pins from underneath and make it look like ghost hands were playing the keyboard. And if they couldn't see a kid was under the piano doing this, I figured don't give him a room. But so this guy came in, and I think he must have cased out the place and seen me playing, jump rope or something outside, and because he saw me under there, and he said, I've got something for you, and he pointed to this big black suitcase he had on the floor, and he unzipped it, and it was a pawn shop guitar. It was a way for him to, well, he did get a room into the place. But it wasn't long afterwards that he set his room on fire. I guess he had a popcorn popper sock, flung over it. It ignited, and I was the one who smelled it, and I got everybody out. My room was like on a back landing, and so I could smell the smoke coming up from the basement. And
at a boarding house in Chicago.
Did
he lose that? Was he remained a tenant, or did he?
He never came back because I think he was terrified. Okay. Yeah, yeah. But I took the guitar.
Good.
That's the one I grabbed, and I got out. But it was a crappy little, like, rainbow-striped wooden guitar, bad warped neck, grimy strings. But I didn't know it, you know, at the time. That was my guitar.
Yeah, if my house is on fire, and when I'm grabbing an order, like, the cat... the cat, the computer, and then probably
tell Christine
that, and the 73. Well, I assume she's going to be helping me grab things.
Okay.
My cellmate. I hope she's going to be grabbing things with me. The cat's a little bit tough, but the 73 Telecaster don't move on its own.
Right.
Quick, honey, get the guitars.
I'll quickly jump in. I had decided several times it was too late for me to learn to play guitar. Mm. That's when I was about 13, and then 14. Finally, I said...
They had guitars then?
Yeah, they had guitars, and I was listening to rock and roll. And finally, in like 1969, I said, okay, I got to get a guitar. A guy was going to teach me. And
I'm sorry, 1969. Sorry, go ahead.
I know, bad time. Bad year for anything. So I got a...
Summer of Love's Over.
A guy in Maspeth sold me his early 1965 Fender Mustang, because at that point, everyone said, oh, nobody would play a Mustang. They said it was a trainer guitar. So I forget what they called it. Mm-hmm. So I bought it for $65, but the guy had tried to refinish it with shellac. So I took it apart, and me and Brian Spaeth at this early age spent turns sanding it. Mm-hmm. Finally, we got bored with that, and we were smoking pot. So it sat in a box in Flushing in my parents' porch. For several years, about 5 years, it sat there until the Fleshtones formed in 1976. Keith Strang was playing a cheap Japanese plastic electric guitar that he found in his basement and needed a real guitar, as he put it. I reassembled the Mustang, gave it to Keith Strang, and it became his famous guitar, pictured on many album covers and in many films and movies, until it was stolen at what airport? Barajas.
Barajas.
All right.
One of my favorite airports in Madrid.
Yeah, in I think early, mid-90s. But that was his guitar.
Oh.
That was Keith Strang's.
And a Mustang's a bitchin' guitar.
It's a bitchin' guitar, but in those days it was like, oh, yeah.
I think Mike Maraconda from the Ronchamps played one early on.
Of course.
You know, by the way, he was at the day I bought that guitar. I just had this idea I should start playing guitar. I've been playing the drums since I was a little kid. It's never too late is the message here. I didn't start playing piano until I was like 40 years old. Old, which some people may or may not consider a mistake if you've heard me play the piano, but I got all the way to college. Well, that's too late if you didn't start playing when you were in high school or young. But I had this crazy idea to start a band, and I needed to write some songs. And I think he actually loaned me the $20 to leave with the guy at We Buy Guitars while I went downtown and tried to like figure out where to get the other $110. But
this
is
good.
Yeah. Yeah, and how about your son was a bitching guitar player.
He is an amazing guitar player.
Yeah, he shreds.
No thanks to me. Yeah, he shreds, and not only that, you know, it's like I walk in the house and he's playing like Spanish classical guitar.
Oh, great.
And I said, where do you
learn? In the Metallica style.
Oh, okay.
And I said, I said, Sergey, where do you learn that? He goes, I'm just reading it. And he's like reading it. He's like, what? Where do you learn to read music? You know?
Yeah, how dare you?
Right.
You're making the rest of us look bad.
Right. And he's sight reading and playing Spanish guitar. It's like, what?
Like our friend Simon Chartier, walking to when he used to work the desk at Coyote Studios, and he's playing Bach, and I'm looking at what he's reading. He's playing it on a 6-string guitar, but it's written for a lute, which has, I don't even know how many strings, 4, I think.
There's different choruses.
But he's sort of like simultaneously transposing the keys and for this, like, you know, this thing written on parchment with a, you know, yikes. And Quill's like, yikes. But and secretly, though, as you know, Simon would much rather play, well, he likes to play Dick Dale and Johnny Thunders, and, you know, and you know, I liked your comment on his last record. Another shout out to our friend Simon. Just that it's a complete punk rock record that has no. It sounds like Minor Threat, and doesn't call attention to the fact that you can play like Django Reinhardt anytime he feels like it. Aww. It's which is that's nice.
He's a great guy. I hope he's surfing.
I guarantee you he is. Julie, you've got a guitar piece prepared for us today and a story behind it, I understand.
I do.
It's like Johnny Carson. It's like me playing. Yeah. Let's go to the clip. You have a clip? You want to set it up?
I feel like Ed.
You look like Ed.
I'm starting to look like Ed. Yeah,
this is Bats and Umbrellas. One of the festivals I went to in the UK was at West Dean, which is in Chichester, which I think Keith Richards might, you know, live around. I tried to interview him for the book, and actually his manager said to me, I think she was really worried it was going to be a technical book where I would
the famous
go off
gin.
On. Yes, exactly. She said to me, honey, Keith knows, well, he can play guitars. He just doesn't know shit about them. So, I mean, it was a t-shirt worthy.
Therein is a good story.
Yeah, but this one, it turned out that West Dean was the 16th century estate that...
Yes.
I guess the last owner.
They were passing around a bottle of tequila and they were laughing. What about West Dean?
Yeah. This guy, Edward James, back in the 1920s, he was the patron who brought in a lot of painters like Dolly and Magritte, Man Ray, a whole bunch of people. He's just
some of my favorite guys.
Do your work here. Yeah.
Pete thinks I'm square because I like modern art. He thinks it's very old-fashioned.
Too old-fashioned.
My love for modern art.
It's things have changed in the last 120 years, Mike.
Yeah. Well, this place is massive and crazy, and as soon as I found out the history of it, I was enthralled. I guess James had this dancer wife who was from New York, and there's a staircase that she went up after she left the bath, just went up without a towel, left her little damp footprints going up the staircase, and he was so in love with her that he had the carpet ripped out of the staircase and rewoven to have her damp footprints in there, but then at one point everything fell apart. He found out that she was cheating on him.
With
so,
the gardener, I would hope.
I don't know who it was, but he ripped out the carpet and had his dog's footprints put in.
Oh, see that? The problems of the upper class.
But you laugh like an American, so
yeah,
how
do
you put over, you know,
I know,
this
I don't.
Lovely British lady, classical reporter.
It's only in print.
Well, laughing in print is the hardest thing to do.
It is.
But let's hear it for Julia Crowe, and what's this called again?
This is Bats and Umbrellas, because I walked into the foyer of this place. It was raining, and I went for my umbrella that I thought I left behind. It turned out to be a bat that flew off in the hallway. So
a bat?
Yeah, and it joined another bat. So these
not,
are,
it wasn't a cricket bat. It was like
it
a bat.
It was a big-ass black bat, you
big
know?
Ass black bat.
Two of them. So you'll hear them swooping.
Thank you. right.
I think he's
Julia Crowe.
Julia Crowe, author of My First Guitar, a story that must be told. Whoa, what happened to the audience? Yeah. Oh, man. I think you've soothed them. They were very surly, and as I said, on the verge of violence.
That is the kind of music that soothes the savage beasts, as well as the kind of stuff that you and I play.
The stuff that we play incites them.
I love in the Jimmy Page story in the book, he says, well, at the time, skiffle and rock and roll were still tolerated by the authorities. For that brief moment, until they realized, because, you know, when it's easy to laugh when you hear these things that rock and roll has got to go, and people were worried that rock and roll on the radio was going to incite teenagers to sex and drinking and drugs and lives of promiscuity, and of course it did.
Well, of course that's what it was for.
That's why it's awesome.
That's why I laugh at these old movies where the kids prove that rock and roll is all right, and they're saying, no, it's not. It's not about sex and violence. Yes, it was. That's why I liked it.
Of course, it made me want to burn down the high school.
Right. Run down the street at night, tipping over garbage cans and screaming. Of course. Of course it did.
Well, you better believe it. Well, the first song I learned on the electric guitar, the reason why I bought the guitar was...
Why did you bring that guitar? Since you can't play. Oh, yes, you can play.
I mean, I really wanted to learn how to play rumble. I was like,
oh.
I mean, this is not when I was 14, you know, it was just not being precocious. So I was 18, it was time to get a guitar. It was very, you know, very...
Rumble, yeah.
Yeah, it was very vertically integrated into the only instrumental that's ever been banned, you know, because it was considered too menacing.
That was menacing. And I like what Link said about it. He said, well, you know, I really couldn't play the guitar, so I had to do the most with what I knew how to do, which was put the emotion into it.
Anyway, I thought I was watching the 68 comeback special Elvis recently, and Elvis was such a good guitar player.
He was great.
He's a wonderful guitar player, and people forget these guys who play guitar that you don't think of as guitar players. You know who's a great guitar player? Bob Dylan. I love it when Bob plays guitar.
Yeah.
You know, he's got like these two like complete, you know, gunslingers to his left and his right, and he is a bitching guitar player. And
I'd rather listen to Bob play than his gunslingers.
And Bruce Springsteen, too. I gotta tell you, he's got these two guys on either side of him who are like really like... You know, Top Fuel drums.
One of which is my boss.
You know, but then Bruce busts it out. It's pure garage rock. It's more of the, you know, Keith Richards, you know, style. And it's entirely awesome. It's like,
Bruce,
you know,
if you're listening.
Yeah, Bruce, if you're listening.
Play more guitar.
You know, when Bruce plays, it's kind of like move over and watch a big dog eat. That's very lovely, Nils. Thank you, Stephen. Now.
That's right.
Watch and learn.
Ouch.
All right. I think it's time we should do a song. We had a couple things.
Us?
Here. We gotta bring this down. We gotta play something our audience would understand.
Pass me that box.
After that lovely here's
the... Yeah, there's enough in there for all three of us. Oh, I can't reach.
Julia, help me out with the
healing. My back. Oh, dear. Julia, come on. Loosen up.
I can't
believe we're having fun here.
He's got Pete Sarumba through his back out, reaching. There you go.
I put my back. There you go. Oh, I didn't say kill it. I just said have a sip.
Your UK's classical music magazine need not know about
the fact that
they're in the US. They
think you're secretly a pirate. I love the line in your book when you go over to the UK and you say, hey, can I review something over here? You know, you're looking for, just like, you know, a normal freelancer, you're hustling, right?
Yeah.
That's what you're supposed to do. And what does he say? He goes, you don't bring Colt. Castles,
right?
I love that.
Why do you think we have you working in New York?
Yeah, exactly. That's how it went.
Julia took a very ladylike sip. Mike, kill it.
It was the best.
Kill it, Mike.
You told me not to drink all of it.
Before I throw my back out. Come on, Julia, help me out here. Come on, you bunch of pirates here.
All righty.
That was the best gig I ever had, was writing classical music for the New York Press.
Yeah.
And they put on the cover, it says, Mike Edison recommends go to mostly Mozart and get stoned. And it had my name on top of it. And I was so proud of it. And they loved it. Because the message being that, like, you know, I mean, how do you attract young people to classical music? It's a tough thing. And I said, you know what? You know what? You like your teenage angst. You like your Brian Wilson. It's a very short leap between Pet Sounds and Mozart.
Yeah.
And maybe the difference is like one jazz cigarette. That's why, maybe that's the leap you need to make. And or if Metallica's more your thing, then I suggest you go see, like, you know, one of the later Beethoven symphonies instead of front, because that'll certainly blow your skirt up. And
that
no
will.
One had ever actually written about classical music in terms of Motorhead.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, no,
and they loved it, you know.
It
hard to sell it. It doesn't help that the people over there, I mean, it is kind of like going to the Natural History Museum, unfortunately.
and that brings us to Eddie Cochran.
No, bring us to Elvis.
So, Eddie Cochran.
You want to do Eddie Cochran?
But Eddie is so important with guitars. I got to say, you, like you were saying, how important he was in Britain. I mean, he had hits here, but in Britain, He was an idol. Yeah. And not only that, I think the key thing that Eddie did by impressing all these Brits was that he made the idea of the guitar-oriented band or presentation really preeminent in British rock and roll. And that gave rise to the Beatles, the Stones, everybody.
Like, you know who loved Eddie Cochran the most? Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin loved him.
Because they did that medley at the end of their shows of Come On Everybody and Something Else, I think.
Something Else.
Right? Later made famous by Sid Vicious, of course.
I'm sure that
popularized by Sid Vicious.
That Jimmy, along with Keith Richards and John Lennon and Paul McCartney, all of them went to see Eddie's famous tour of Britain in 1960. With him and Gene Vincent and the Blue Caps, and Sheridan was in there, the British guy.
Footnote to the Beatles.
Footnote, but anyway, if I remember the date correctly, April 17th, 1960, ended tragically where they were trying to get to like the fourth stop, on this tour in the day, you know, they packaged tours, you know, and they Eddie was killed in Britain. Never to be forgotten in Britain. Anyway.
Well, I was trying to tie this into your Led Zeppelin story, but...
Tie it in, baby.
There it is. Well, you tell the story. It's your story. It's a day you were running numbers for Peter Grant.
I was right. Actually, I had heard all sorts of horrible stories about their manager, Eddie Grant, a big guy, a big threatening man. And I was standing in my my boss's, my first job with Ron Delsner, a rock impresario in New York, standing there, and he cuts a check and he goes, well, actually, he told me to go to the bank in New York and pick up a cashier's check. That's what I had to do. And then he goes, go to the Plaza Hotel and give this, go to this floor and hand this check.
Ticket wasn't for 0.009.
He said, hand this to a big guy named Mr. Peter Grant. I go up on the elevator, the elevator doors open. And standing right there is a hulking, huge guy with a beard and a ponytail. And it was Peter Grant. And behind him, lolling about in the corridor of this floor of the hotel, were various members of Led Zeppelin.
Lolling.
They were lolling about. And I handed, I said, Mr. Grant.
John Bonham does not loll.
They were lolling. I handed Peter Grant this envelope. He tore it open. He took a look at the check, I was expecting the worst because I was told he's horrible. A huge smile went across his lips, and then he gently patted me on the shoulder.
Wait, but it wasn't a giant novelty check.
No, it was a cashier's check from the Bank of New York for a pile of money. So anyway, I paid Led Zeppelin for their shows at the whatever it was.
You should have clipped a piece of that for yourself.
I should have said, hey, what about me?
Yeah. All right, as always, it's been the fastest 30 minutes on the radio today. Let's hear it for our guest, Julia Crowe, whose almost new book, My First Guitar, is truly fantastic. And she's also a great guitar player, and you have many CDs out. And
I do. Empire of Light and Smoke and Steel.
And where can we find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, absolutely. JuliaCrowe.com.
All right. And wishing you good luck with Eric Clapton, but not really.
You've got to get over the wall of this compound.
Sean Connery
might help you. Well, she gets up in the morning with the bristles and the head, ready for school before class begins. Oh, little Lou, can I walk to school with you? You know the bells are ringing. If we are late, what shall we do? Well, the teacher's in the class and asks us where we've been late. I said, we're just lagging. Oh, little Lou, why did you make me hesitate? You know the teachers will say, there's no excuse for being late. Come on, take a little. Woo! Well, lunch bell's ringing and it's time for us to eat. The gang keeps a shoving, stepping on my feet, little Lou. I saved up a place in line for you. But now that lunch has passed, can I walk you back to class? Now, the waiter's class is over, I'm standing all alone. The football star was my little Lou. Oh, little Lou.
time is more than I can bear. I'll try tomorrow. Hope to hear you say care. Oh, well, well, little, little. There's more than I can bear. I'll try tomorrow. Hope to hear you say care. Whoa, 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 little, little. There's more than I can bear. Oh, the crowd's going wild.
Hey, before we go, Julie, you got one more? Play a side. Julie Grohl, play a side.
Play a side.
Take us someplace crazy. Take us to heaven.
Play us out.
Let's ride that bat out of hell. Ooh, that's a good name for a song.
I'm ready for some pizza.
Pizza Rambo, always ready for some pizza. All right, Julie Grohl, everybody. Pizza Rambo, Mike Madison, countdown. 250 yards and seizures. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.